It's very calming music for a day that the last emotion I feel is calm right now. But it's good to help us point us in that direction. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It is Election Day 2024. After years of talking about it, here it is. Isn't it exciting?
Yes.
Isn't it better than you thought it would be? Oh, it's just glorious. We have a lot to talk about today. We have a wonderful panel to do it. We will be with you until 11 o'clock today. And then, of course, the rest of the show. We have much to discuss, and we'll get to all of that. Of course, the candidates making their final push across the country, but really spending a lot of time in the state, in the states, I will say, in both North Carolina and Pennsylvania, but especially Pennsylvania, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Two things to remind you. One, full coverage tonight, if you want to listen, and I urge you to listen to WAMC's coverage of Election 2024. Both the WAMC news team and NPR will be presenting all of the results and all of the information from all of the races, and that will be tonight. So tune in and find out everything you need to know about the election as the results start to come in and continue to come in throughout the evening and, yes, early morning hours. Also, a reminder that it is not too late if you would like to join us and be a part of our three-hour panel discussion that we are going to have tomorrow live at the Linda with a group of, I believe, 16 panelists. 14 panelists.
Cut in half.
Yeah, cut in half. Although when we say that, we confuse people because they think there's like an early and a late showing. But if there's one show, there's two different groups.
Right.
That's the way it'll work. Like Act One, Act Two. And we are going to have, we're going to talk about the race. We're going to talk about what we know. We're going to talk about what we don't know. And obviously, if any breaking news is to break out during that, we will talk about that as well. Hey, Mike, I'm Jay's on three. Mike Bowen, Jay's on three. I don't know. I'm not getting you.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. All right, no, stick with three now.
Okay.
Go back. We don't really want to hear from you, so yeah,
we
stick
got
with three.
Yeah, there you are. What were you saying, Ray? Sorry.
Fascinating challenge. If you have breaking news in the middle of that, to suddenly have opinions.
You know, we're going to go see what we'll see. Obviously, we're going to yield, meaning that we'll yield to if there is a press conference or if there is a
concession
or a victory speech. We will go to those, obviously. So don't feel that you will miss any of that by being at the program. We'd love to have you. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. It is a donation. And just go to, there's a tab right on the front of the website. Just click on that. It'll bring you through. And we'd love to get you seated for tomorrow's broadcast. I think it'll be it's good to be amongst friends with good news or bad news or however you look at it. All right. Let me introduce the group to you this morning. We have a wonderful group to talk about these issues on Election Day. Jay Jochnowitz is here, semi-retired editor-at-large, columnist, editorial writer at the Times Union. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
I'm well.
Really not. You're all right?
I'm telling you, I don't know what it is. It's a little scary that I am. I feel good.
Okay.
I really feel
good. All right.
Good.
All right. Will you be working later than normal hours?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't work today. And actually, you know, the newsroom is a very quiet place these days, as anybody that's been in the newsroom
knows. Really.
And, you know, the big news of the night, Senate and House are still pretty big deals. But we just don't have that many people in the newsroom to be doing that. They'll be out in the field. They'll be working remotely. This is the new normal in journalism. So, and no pizza. So I don't know of any pizza.
I don't know.
Then what's the use of going to the newsroom?
That's right. That's a good, very, very good point.
Really.
I believe it's hat night though.
Mike Spain is with us, former Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm shocked to hear there's no pizza in the newsroom. That was like one of my jobs, you know, making sure we had adequate pizza.
What has gone wrong with that place since you left?
And there may be pizza for whoever is in the room tabulating results. The web desk will probably have pizza.
And there you go. Yeah.
So much comes in as data that gets streamed and then it turned into print and all that. It's in being out in the field is the place to be where the action is happening. But it's just, you know, it's nostalgic to think of a newsroom on election night.
Libby Post is going to be busy, I think, tonight. Are you going to be out and about tonight?
I am going to be, I teach.
Yes.
So I'm teaching for
that's
a while.
That's dedication.
Well, you know, it's my campaign class. I have So we're gonna. I'm gonna do my lecture on fundraising, actually, and then no guests. They're gonna work on their group projects, and then we will all head off to our various places. I'll be up at the Italian American Community Center, where the Albany County Democratic Committee will be. And I'll bring my computer, and I'll be upstairs and. We will watch the returns, and then once we know locally what's going on, which shouldn't be take that long, because the Board of Elections in Albany County is pretty quick to put the results up. We should know by 10:30, the local elections, and then, I would say Thursday or Friday on the other.
What about the House seats down the Hudson Valley?
I think we'll know that, too. I think we'll I think we'll have a good idea that you check the New York State Board of Elections website for those sites because they go beyond for those races
because
they
go county,
go multiple counties. But I've always found that site to be updated as quickly as they humanly can as well. And so I'm feeling cautiously. And not nauseously optimistic.
Right, that was a great line yesterday.
Yeah. But I'm feeling cautiously optimistic. I think, look, we're going to talk about this later. The ground game on GOTV, Get Out the Vote, is what it's all about. And the Democrats, when they have their act together, which they do this time around, there's nobody better on ground game than Dems. And they really get it. And the stories we read showed, you know, they're paying. The Dems are paying their people. We've got, in New York alone, there are like 30 headquarters around this country, even in Belmont, New York, on Main Street, which is Allegheny County, because my animal shelter person out there told me. You know, so they've got the ground game. They've got offices all over the place, all over the swing states. The governor and the New York party has done what they need to do here. The Long Island seats are going to be the ones that we need to watch tonight, plus Molinaro, Riley, which I think Riley might pull this off. And let's, you know, so, but it is all about the ground game and getting people out to vote. And we have done a very good job of getting the Dems out. So
meanwhile, in the big state, what everyone seems to be watching, and I mentioned this earlier, is both North Carolina, and especially Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania seems to be the prize, 19 electoral votes, and it is it's a huge puzzle piece for either campaign, whether it be that of Kamala Harris or for former President Donald Trump. I learned this morning that the biggest swing county in all of Pennsylvania is Bucks County.
Which is interesting, because that's the gay county, isn't it?
There's
gay stuff going on there? More than Philly?
John, would you like to weigh in on whether it's the gay county?
Well, I just thought there's more.
Well, I would say Bucks County is definitely a friendly place for all kinds of folks, and we're LGBTQ friendly.
Right.
There are certain municipalities that do probably have a larger LGBTQ. You're probably thinking of New Hope, which is a well-known artist colony that's about 10 miles north of where I'm at today.
So John Lewis is with us. He is a guest, as our guest this morning, just for a few minutes, and we are thrilled to have him. He is the super. He is the supervisor of the Lower Makefield Township Board of Board of Supervisors, or what is it? Town board? Town?
Yeah, it's equivalent to, it's your township board. So yeah. Yes, it's like you might have council members in a town. Ours are called supervisors in Lower Makefield Township.
So
it's
you're
about 33,000 people.
You're the chair of that, and you've been on the ground working that ground game. You're a democratically elected politician and have been for how many years?
I first started, was elected in 2015.
Okay.
So I've served since 2015.
So you got a couple elections under your belt here. And in full disclosure, John is one of my dearest friends. We've been friends since the sixth grade. And I was talking to him this morning and invited him to be on the air. And we promised not to tell stories about each other, and here we are. So,
did I make that promise? I don't recall that being the disclaimer, but the interest of, I'll be quiet.
We'd like the dirt, actually.
So let me just ask this. So you're at a polling place right now, right?
Yes.
And
I'm at Edgewood Elementary School in Lower Makefield Township, Pennsylvania. Yes.
Does it feel to you like you are at the center of the universe in the sense of it being the biggest swing county in all of the country?
Yes, in a way. I'll tell you, we've been a swing state for a while, and where I sense the energy is actually when people do door knocking on the weekends, right? It's how many people are coming out to volunteer to knock doors. And when I hear people come from Connecticut or from New York or from New Jersey, I'm always so thankful that they come to Pennsylvania and help us on election time. And I aspire to someday be able, in a circumstance where we're not a swing state, and I can go to another state to knock doors and pay it forward. But yes, I get that energy. And this year, I think the energy is at almost surpassing 2008 levels in terms of, the number of people that are out and knocking doors. And, so we have a tremendous operation going on that's been going on.
Now, one of the I
was going to say on Saturday, we knocked 99,246 doors in Bucks County. Now, there are 249,000 households. To give you an idea, that's one day's door knocking. That's the level of volunteer effort that was put out in terms of our ground game. And again, most of these folks that are out there knocking doors, those are regular people. Those are volunteers. They're not, paid canvassers. They're not getting that Elon Musk sweet money, right? These are people that want to be out there because they care about their country, want to make a difference. And that's exciting. So, I knock doors Saturday, Sunday. I could sense that there is strong engagement. People are saying, hey, you've knocked my door three times in the last couple of weeks, but we need to get people out to vote. And that's what we do in our GOTV efforts.
So let me ask this question, because we keep hearing about this, about the either the non-committed or the indifferent voter, the undecideds. And
mm-hmm.
And I will admit, not so proudly, but I will admit on this show when that is mentioned, I will often roll my eyes and just wonder how many people out there can there be who haven't made up their mind. As someone who has knocked on as many doors as you have, are there really people, especially in your county, which is pretty 50-50, right? Democratic,
mm-hmm.
Republican.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Are there people who haven't made up their mind?
Yes. And about 3 weeks ago, I encountered a person, and it struck me that they said they were undecided. I was flummoxed for a second. And now I've gotten an appreciation of the way to handle that in a way. I don't know if you've ever watched Bill Maher, but he had he was talking about how his father would only buy Christmas gifts on Christmas Eve. There's a whole cohort of people that don't spend their entire waking moments reading the news or thinking about politics.
Shocking.
And those shocking, yeah. Those people live their lives.
We don't talk to them. Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead.
Yeah. They live their lives. They're happy. or hopefully they're happy. And when it comes closer to election, they give some thought to it, and they maybe haven't been focusing on that. Those are people that are very important. There aren't that many of them. But, you know, I had a great discussion with a father and son that were not going to be voting for the vice president. They were considering a third-party candidate, and I explained in detail why that wasn't such a great choice. And they were persuadable. And a good discussion with some policy discussion will help move people. And the fascinating thing, what polls aren't catching is, how are the undecided or late deciders breaking? And my hope is, and some of the evidence is suggesting that it's breaking for Vice President Harris. That is not to say that that's a certainty, but, you know, sensing that is what we're feeling right now.
So when you look at the of what's going on, like right today, you're at a polling place. Busy?
Yes. So our polls opened at 7 a.m., and I was here about 10 minutes before the polls opened. And the line coming out of the poll was over 100 feet long, maybe a little longer. Kind of give you an idea of people lined up, queued up. This is before the polls were opening. and fortunately, right now, because I think it's like that's after 9 o'clock, we still have, you know, I'm looking at the line here. There's still a significant line, but it's not what it once was in the morning. People are moving through pretty comfortably. And this is reminiscent of the same kind of lines that we saw, you know, 4 years ago.
As far as the lawsuit, I mean, I know there's lawsuits all over. One was in Bucks County over voting. And I mean, do you just sort of see this tension of everything being very closely watched and monitored?
Yes. In Pennsylvania, we have elected constables that help with order in the polling places. There are some where, and I spoke to the constable in this area recently, about like an hour ago. There are some crusty folks out there, but by and large, things are moving pretty smoothly right now. And there's also, you know, a whole group of lawyers if there's ever an issue. All that stuff is set up. And the county, you know, Bucks County is a swing county in the swing state, and the voter registration, it's, you know, separates. It's like the Republicans have 1,700 vote registration advantage right now. But the county has worked pretty well to be effective to make sure that everybody has the opportunity to vote and that they have a free and open process. And that's not a partisan issue in Bucks County. The county commissioners have worked really well together on that. And I could speak highly of all three of the county commissioners and their work that they've done so far.
When you look at tonight and the election results, I know that in the past, Pennsylvania has taken a while to get those results in. Do you have any sense of what that will be like tonight?
Yeah. So one of the things in Pennsylvania is the law prohibits us from counting the ballots until starting at 7 a.m. on election day. So they can't do any of the pre-processing that you'd like to do and, like, even pre-count all the votes until, like, when election day starts. That being said, counties are sharing their process improvements. And, for example, Allegheny County was much faster than Philadelphia County. Some of the things that they did in terms of how they count mail-in ballots have improved the process. And my hope is that after the polls close, we may have some directional sense of where things are. And again, the challenge you have is where ballots are being processed from, right? So if I do a whole bunch of ballots, but they're all from, you know, a certain municipality that may lean one way or the other, that doesn't give you the directional numbers you need unless you go back and look at that individual municipality and how they voted previously. So I'm hopeful that we may have some sense now, not by 10 o'clock, but maybe later, 1:30, 2:30 in the morning. We'll have a better sense of where things are and, you know, we'll, you know, whether we should feel good or not. And, you know, with any of these, you never know until the ballots start coming in. So, you know, the polling being close, you know, that's just, we're used to that here, I guess, over time. So I'm hopeful it won't be till Saturday.
Yeah, it would be nice if it was, if you actually could have some day of the week that you didn't have to be worried about this. In the sense of we were talking right before you came on with us about the ground game and the ground game with the Harris campaign. Have you seen that in? I mean, obviously you have, but have seen that in action and what that has been like? And can you compare it perhaps to other campaigns that you've worked on? Of what that has been like, especially given the truncated period of time that they had to bring it all together?
Well, first, in terms of the GOTV or Get Out the Vote effort, the Democratic Party in Bucks County does this not just in presidential years, but we build aggressive field operations in off-year elections for county races. So we actually have people, we hire people, we get them started. We're knocking doors in the summertime. And as a candidate, I've knocked doors starting in like April, kind of give you an idea. So we're pretty well versed on that. And this year, the volume of volunteers was higher than normal presidential years. The coordination between campaigns was not perfect, but very, very good. I think it was Will Rogers who said, I don't belong to an organized party. I'm a Democrat. Right. You know, sometimes things aren't as coordinated as you like, but this time I thought we did, by and large, pretty good. I give us a sort of B+ on the coordination side. And the volunteer passion and effort's clearly off the charts. And that makes, you know, makes up for any coordination miscues that we might have had on the field efforts.
Let's say you're one of those undecided voters and you were so inclined and you say, you know what, I want to do my real homework as a citizen, and I want to go to rallies for both major party candidates in the presidential race. If you lived in Bucks County, that would not have been hard, correct?
Yes. I mean, you could see this is another downside of this thing, because after Election Day, we're not going to have any famous people come to Bucks County. But yeah, I mean,
you got the county fair. President, yeah,
No, they won't be at the Grange Fair next year. But we've had not just all the major party candidates. Vice presidential candidate Vance was in the neighboring municipality last night. Governor Walz was here Thursday. Vice President Harris had her final rally, was in Philadelphia last night. Former President Trump was, again, at the same place that Vance was last night. So we've had all those folks, but then we've had, you know, famous actors and actresses. My wife got to meet Jennifer Garner, the actress. I missed seeing Richard Kind, who is a Pensbury graduate, which is, I'm like, that's the guy I wanted to meet. I'm like, well, why didn't I get the invite to that one? I'm like, by the way, Doug Emhoff, nice guy. Really nice guy. We talked music. Really nice guy. But, a lot of famous people come in and out for that. And you'd be surprised. You do end up getting to meet some of these people, except I didn't get to meet Richard Kind. I'll be speaking to my party chair about
that. But it's not
that.
Bitter.
No, but it's not
so
bitter.
Sorry.
That's too bad.
I have to work on something to get you two together, John. I feel bad. Any questions from the group here?
Well, we could talk and talk, but when you contrast this feeling you have, you describe of enthusiasm and, you know, seeing the spirit of the ground game, how does that weigh against what you read when it comes to the polls?
So the polling is fascinating because there's so much more polling this cycle than in prior years. And a lot of the polling is defective in terms of you can tell it's off base immediately when it shows something that's way out of alignment. And then you start to dig into the crosstabs or you look at the sample size and you know that it's not the same as others. That being said, I think we're having a realization of the limits of polling and how accurate it can be, especially when voters make last-minute decisions, especially because, you know, landlines are gone for the most part. And then the bias of the people who answer polls, right? So when I get polling questions, I have to first disclose that, hey, I'm an elected official, I'm activist Democrat, and I work in marketing, right? And, you know, sometimes that will disqualify me from a poll and probably should, right? Hmm. How do you get accurate people for that? So I think we're at the point where we're starting to realize, hey, there's some real limits to what polling can do, and not put as much faith in polling as I think people have. And this gets into how, and I might get in trouble here, Joe's a friend, but how the media covers elections, right? As a horse race, as opposed to analyzing the candidates, contrasting their issues, very little of that gets done, especially when you get, you know, down ballot.
That's why we're sucking up to you now.
So I have a question. I think the last time or the time before that I went down to Costa Rica, I did not know this, but we flew right into the middle of an election. It was insane. Just people in the streets with cars and banners and trucks, and what was fascinating about it, and my wife and I were both like stunned by it, because we were lost, as we often get in San Jose, trying to get out of San Jose. So we just kept running into rally after rally after rally and caravan. The joy and the exuberance was just unbelievable. Are you experiencing, when you look around, do you sense an emotion here? Is it somberness? Is it joy? Is it anger? Is it we're gonna do this? You know, any overall impression of that?
It's really kind of bifurcated. There's a whole bunch of folks that are angry about where the direction of the country is going, and that's motivating why they're coming out to vote and who they're voting for. And then there's a whole host of folks that are worried about the future of the country and what might happen if one of the candidates were to win. So it's not the traditional, you know, I've been active in campaigns for a long time. It's probably over 40 years. And, you know, and I grew up in an area that was very Republican. You know, the Democrats didn't win races or anything like that. But election days were a happy day, and everybody got out, and it was somewhat joyous. And now it doesn't have quite that feeling, unfortunately. Mm. And I would like for that to come back, you know, where people come together. You still have people excited to see their neighbors, right? So separate from the active voting, people are excited to come out, wait in line, because they're going to see their neighbor and talk to somebody or reach out. That part is still there, and that's good, although it can be tense at times.
Thanks. John, do you have a question? You're good?
No, I'm good. I just like listening.
Yes, all right.
believe it or not, folks.
I want to ask him about the demographic makeup of the township again. John Lewis is the chair of the Board of Supervisors in Lower Makefield Township. This is the center of the storm, Bucks County, Pennsylvania, considered to be the biggest swing county in all of the country, and could very well be the decider in the election tonight. John, thanks very much for taking so much time out of your schedule and your hard work there. I appreciate it, and it's always great to talk to you, but it's really nice to have you on the air and to chat about these issues.
Thanks so much for having me, and look forward to chatting with you soon. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll go through all the other cool stuff to talk about, like all the other states. We'll do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Jay Jochnowitz, Libby Post, and Mike Spain. We have all of them here to talk about Election Day 2024. Just got an on-the-ground report from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and Bucks County, and now look to some of the other areas, of course. I think it's safe to say, obviously, this is a close election, and it is an election that is going to be, we were just talking about it during the break. John mentioned it before. You know, we hope we know something a lot more than we do in the middle, you know, 1-2 in the morning. Maybe we'll have some better sense, or at least what we're ultimately waiting for of, you know, this is the outstanding thing that we're waiting for, as was the case in Georgia in 2020. But any way you look at it, it is a it is a close contest. But Libby, and I'll go to you, and well, Jay, you too, but both saying that you are optimistic, mm-hmm. Which I think if you'd asked people a week and a half ago, they were less optimistic of how things were going to go.
Maybe. I mean...
And that's either side, by the way.
Yeah, right. I mean, I have to maintain some degree of... On the better side of the plus sign than on the minus sign. I mean, for my own head. So, you know, I am optimistic. I remember how I felt at 9:30 on election day in 2016. I thought I was going to throw up. And it's the least likely thing for me to do. And so I was just devastated, as we all were. And I remember... We had the election thing, the roundtable, the next day, and it was just, you know, oh my God. But it's a different time. First of all, you have a Republican candidate in Trump who is so profoundly flawed and obviously diminished. He couldn't get in the truck. He doesn't know where he is half the time. He, you know, did something weird with a microphone. I'm not going to get into the details of it. But he's meandering, he's wandering verbally, he's not making any sense. They call it the weave, I call it the man is, you know, not all there. And so you have that on top of the threats and the rhetoric. The threats to the media, the threats to Liz Cheney. We're going to protect women whether they like it or not. That's what, you know, that's what a rapist says. I'm sorry. And he is a rapist. And we had this discussion yesterday. The judge said yes to that. You know,
it
no matter
to rape. Yeah.
Right, right. No matter what women want, we're going to do whatever we want. And that goes directly to his, you know, Access Hollywood, grab him by what they grab him by. But what I can't say on radio. So, you know, there's all of that. And there's the Dobbs decision. And there are women voting who are older, who cannot believe their granddaughters don't have the same rights that they do, that they did. And so there's the women. And I've been also saying, you know, the younger voters that, you know, the Swifties, the Beyoncés, all those folks. And so I am optimistic because I do think that the country doesn't want him. I mean, there are people who do, but overall, we want a new way forward, which is what Harris has been saying all along. That's one of her taglines, is a new way forward. And she's absolutely right. We do need a new way forward. And we need to move away from the toxicity of this political moment. And the country needs to heal. And people need to not revel in their ignorance anymore, because that's what they do. They really, really do. And don't tell me, you have to prove it, like what you were saying before about something small. But nonetheless, you know, you know, when you say to somebody, no, that's wrong, here are the facts. Nope, those aren't the facts. Those aren't my facts. Well, I'm sorry, but 2 + 2 = 4. And there are still facts. And, you know, so I'm done with my diatribe now. I'm optimistic.
Can I just ask your opinion,
sure,
Libby? I mean, I think despite all the criticisms of the press covering this as a horse race, and they certainly do,
and
everyone
it is.
Watches Pulse, but I think the media has also been exhaustive in portraying what it would be like under Trump, what it would be like based on what he has said and based on the people that it surround him and based on his first term. And everything that he has said, all the things you just said during that time just now. And but has Kamala Harris had, while there's a strong case for people to not reelect and return Donald Trump to the White House, have people been... Generally speaking, have people know enough? Has she been able to get her message across in a few months to be the alternative? I mean, that's my sense. People don't like Trump, but I don't know about Kamala Harris. And I just want, I mean, I hear that she's a radical liberal and it worries the heck out of me, you know? Well, and I mean, people, I mean, that's, that is, it's all about how people land on that whole thing. Do I vote at all? Do I vote for Trump because things were okay during the first 2 years that he was president? Or do I take a chance on someone I don't really know?
It's this deeply baked misogyny into our souls of thinking a woman can't do this job. Okay, that's number one. Number two, look, I love you guys in the media. You know that. But Trump sells papers. Trump sells ads on TV, TV news. He sells, right? And your job ultimately is to make sure that you can publish the next day, which means advertising and people buying the paper and blah, 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 and watching the news. You know, and so he's much more sensational, and I think he gets much more airtime and much more print because of that. And that she, you know, there is no bar for him, but her bar is like as high as the Empire State Building.
Are you suggesting a double standard?
Yes, I am, dear. And so, you know, I think that's a lot of what plays into this. You know, it's like there's a meme on Facebook that I love. You know, we know that Darth Vader, you know, used the Death Star and blah, 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 blah. But I'm not quite sure about Leia. Just not really quite sure, you know. She had that skimpy thing when she was hanging out with Jabba the Hutt. So, you know, I mean, it's like this notion that women just can't do this job. And the thing about Harris that she has not done, which I think has been very smart, she has not spoken about being a woman. She has not spoken about being a woman of color, other than when he's being really racist. But that's not why she's running. She's not running to break the glass ceiling. She's running to protect democracy. And that's really been her bottom line message. And I'm sorry, and this is something that always happens. Democrats think people are going to respond to logic and fact. It's one of our biggest failings. and you know, and not to emotion and values. And so Trump is really good. You know, there's the four basic food groups of emotion: love, hate, fear, and hope. And Trump is really great at the fear and the hate. She came through that convention with love, hope, joy, all the rest of that stuff. But that's a harder sell than hate is.
It sure is. I agree.
Okay?
I agree.
So,
that's a lift.
And we want people, we want to educate people. We want people to know the facts. And people just want to be told what to think. And that's part of the issue that we're dealing with.
The last few days I've quoted this more than once. It was some columnist who, it was a headline on a column that said, if how would this election be any different if Trump was trying to lose it? And I think of all the things you listed and more. I went through these in the editorial board meeting yesterday, saying, you know, should we write one more editorial about everything that happened this weekend? This is the last weekend of the campaign, and we're talking, you know, in the final days anyway, you know, the Kennedy and vaccines and everything about
Obamacare,
Elon Musk
and
getting rid of Obamacare that he shouldn't have left the White House in 2020, and the idea of shooting the press is okay in his mind, and shooting Liz Cheney is a suggestion
he's
making.
Let's be honest.
All of this, the microphone, the vulgarity, everything, you put it all together, and maybe this is one of the reasons I'm optimistic, is I do think that some people are going to go into the election booth and I think it may come down to a lot of women.
Yeah.
In states like Iowa and the various swing states, who are going to say,
enough.
I am tired of this. I don't want four more years of this. And, you know, the way to end this is to get this guy out of politics. And if he loses this election, he's done. He's done.
Only women really understand what it means to bleed out in a parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And another woman died last week in Texas. There have been a number of deaths. I saw a Harris commercial last night of a family of women whose daughter died because she couldn't get the care. And women understand this. Men, I think, recognize it and are affected by it and don't want their spouses or their loved ones to have to go through that. But women understand what it means to bleed out in a parking lot. And it's something that I think that Trump, when she said that in the debate, you could see the look on his face, because he had said in 2016, oh, she's got blood coming out of all these different places. You know, he only sees women good for one thing.
He also said in 2016 that women who have abortions should face punishment.
That's right. Right. Should face punishment. What about, you know, so I'm sorry, but, oh, I'm not sorry. I think women are going to be the savior of this election. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are plenty of women in Pennsylvania, because I've heard these stories, when they were going door to door, the woman would answer the door at a Republican house or an NOP house, and she'd go, right. She'd go, shh, my husband's home, you know, but don't worry.
I'm canceling him out.
Right. But I'll see you later. And Trump has even said, if your wife votes against me, that, you know, not that it's grounds for divorce, but he has said that you're not in control of your woman. And I'm sorry, but you don't get to be in control of your woman.
Let's go to a couple letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics at the top of the hour. James writes, we're making a mistake if we paint all undecided voters with the same brush. Undecided voters are not all undecided for the same reason. It's like men in relationships who haven't decided to propose. Some have good reason for not getting down on one knee. Others might just be a little scared. Please don't assume. We need to be sensitive if we hope to connect with those who have yet to make up their minds. Then we go to Toby. I live in Great Barrington, and canvassing with friends near Scranton, Pennsylvania this weekend, I encountered three voters who were undecided. I had some very interesting, encouraging conversations with them and came away feeling that they would be voting for Harris Walz. I suggested that if they still felt undecided on Tuesday, they could think of me. One of them joked that she'd vote twice after talking with me. The issues they mentioned were abortion rights, Russia's war in Ukraine, just being dissatisfied with both candidates and unhappy with the process that led to Harris topping the ticket. Unfortunately, we encountered a handful of registered Democrats who had voted early for Trump. But I also met a Republican who had joined his registered Democratic son to vote for Harris. He was passionate about it. Then we go to Eric, who says, Libby, I love your political analysis, but I do sense a tension between the Trump is addled narrative and the Trump will be a dictator concern. Which is it? And if it's both, how does that work?
There is that, but all the people he's going to put in place from the Heritage Foundation, the treasurer of the Heritage Foundation is David Green, who's the CEO of Hobby Lobby. So he'll have plenty of people to make sure that Project 2025 is put into place. He will be sort of like, you know, the mouthpiece, and they'll prop him up to say what he needs to say. But the people behind him will make sure all of this. And don't underestimate the ability of J.D. Vance to have a major role in this and actually be the president.
Yeah, I was amazed in the first term at how effective they were mm-hmm. in going item by item by item by item over the course of 4 years. They never gave up. They never stopped. And it was not Trump doing this every day. He was not sitting at a board meeting every morning going,
golf.
Okay,
yeah.
So here are the 4,000 items I wanted to do. How are we doing on number 137? That was not it. Other people were doing this. They are even more organized this year.
But you also had guardrails list. You had John Kelly. You had Mike Espy. You had people who actually believed in democracy. They might have been Republicans, but believed in democracy and understood what a threat he was, and they put some guardrails up. Now that's not going to happen. No. The chief of staff is going to be Mike Flynn. You know, could you imagine?
Polls are open across the country and across our listening area. It is Election Day 2024. We'll continue our coverage and go for another hour upon our return. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Dot O-R-G. First, a news break with Ray Graff. We talk about all kinds of things during the break, but right now the three panelists are talking about the next election cycle, and I'm just not comfortable with it at all. Let's please get through this one, okay?
Yeah, hey, I'm beyond it already.
When did this election cycle begin, in your opinion, Joe?
Like January 6th, right? I mean, like January 6th, 2021.
Yep.
I think so.
It's been a long, long slog.
It sure has. It's been a very long slog.
I would say it was after the impeachment.
Yeah.
I think that's when Mitch McConnell said, he did a terrible thing, but we really can't impeach him for this, and the courts will take care of it. I think that's about where it began.
Yeah, yes. And the courts took care of it already, all right. They gave him full immunity.
Yeah.
I mean, and just what we have collectively been through over the last, since June, with the debate, the Biden-Trump debate, it's just been a whirlwind, an absolute whirlwind.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. My wife and I... after the last election, there was a brief period where suddenly we didn't our conversations were not as animated and fluid. We realized how much talk went on in our household about the election and about the state of politics and society and the craziness of it all. And for a while, we had a kind of reboot. As to what do we talk about now?
What do normal people talk about? Or what did we talk about before all of this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes it's far more interesting, but maybe not as important.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I want to get through a lot of letters here. We have a lot of letters, so we'll catch up with those, and then we'll move on to some other topics. Debbie says, I was told this morning that people in New York City and other cities are boarding up in anticipation of riots. Do you have any information on this? The only information I have is what I have seen on other broadcast outlets, that there are, I think, after January 6th, there are a number of governmental agents who agencies that are putting into place protocols that would, in case something breaks out, that they are ready to respond. I don't know so much about the boarding up. As much as, for example, there is extra fencing going in around the
White House.
Presidential residence in D.C. and around some of the major thoroughfares. That all seems to make some sense. But as far as and I was listening to one security official yesterday say that, look, we know now what is possible, and we've had a lot of meetings to discuss what we can do about it and how to respond, and we feel that we're ready for it. So I don't know that it's so much of just this fear of battening down the hatches as much as being ready to respond to whatever may develop.
I was my favorite thing, and it has had me smiling. Maybe that's why I was smiling this morning, was having heard it last night, was the Philadelphia district attorney. I don't know if anybody else in the room heard this, but he gave a news conference yesterday, and I will not drop an F-bomb on the – because he did not. So I think I can say F-bomb.
Okay, yeah.
So,
that's what he said.
He said, F with us and find out.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how I
F
feel too.
F around and find out.
Yeah.
I think we have the cuffs. Yeah. We have the cops, and we have the prisons.
Yeah.
Right. Now, is that broader?
Ahead. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, the question is the U.S. Justice Department, you know, in the post-election period, if there's a lot of uncertainty, and there's counts going on still in Arizona or Nevada or California, wherever, and or recounts going on in Georgia like last time, you know, will they provide monitors to make sure some Yahoo in some county doesn't like hand over the ballots to a third party like it happened in Georgia, et cetera, in the last election? You know, will the Justice Department be kind of poised to pounce when things get irregular?
Well, I think so, because there's Democrats are in charge of the Justice Department. They want to see things run properly. Last time around, the Republicans were in charge of the Justice Department, and they were not invested in having things run properly, well, at least in 2020. And then we saw what happened. So,
it may not be necessary. We may know.
Right.
We may know by this time tomorrow.
That's right. And Harris has said she will accept the outcome of the election. She believes in the integrity of the election system. The all of these lies that are being put out by Trump and his cronies to not trust it undermines our democracy and undermines our faith in government, which is really not a good thing.
Yeah, if a firm decision could be made by 9:09 tomorrow morning, that'd be awesome.
That would be great.
Right, don't hold your breath.
It'd be very helpful for our show. Yes.
It would give you a point to discuss from.
Yes. I do worry more, mm-hmm. less about violence and more about the, kind of a reboot of the 2000 election where it gets litigated, where we have Miami-Dade on a national scale. Everything being, protests. And the Brooks Brothers riot, just a lot of lawyers out there and would-be lawyers and so forth.
That's a good point. It could end up more like 2000, the year 2000, the Gore-Bush thing, than 2020 was. Yeah.
Andrew writes, something that struck me this morning as I voted in Greenwich, Washington County, I managed to vote for women in 4 of the 6 offices available. I'm going to call my mom and let her know. Pretty cool.
Greenwich. What is this problem people have with women holding elected office? It's all over the place. It's all over the world. It's like we're past that, aren't we?
Yeah, but we are a Puritan country here.
Mm. Well, I mean...
And we're center right.
I mean, no disrespect to you, of course, Mike, but I mean, if we were past it, we would have had a mm-hmm. female president by now. I mean,
I know. I'm bemoaning the fact that that has seemed to be a factor.
I mean, but you're right. I mean, in so many different levels, certainly in the House, certainly in the Senate, although in reduced numbers, but there, mm-hmm.
New York has a woman governor.
Yes.
One of the 2 U.S. senators is a woman. It has several women members of Congress. And certainly on the local level, there's tons of women holding office. What is this reluctance that we seem to have?
Will writes to us and says, the former president does not plan to win the vote. He'll take it, but that is not his plan. He and his co-conspirators plan to disrupt the country. We'll try to throw the election into the House of Representatives where Republicans will install him as president, or they'll find some other way to defraud the country. That's a very grim analysis, although something that has been brought up, that is...
I actually, we were having this discussion the other night, and I did not know all the ins and outs, and I pulled out my pocket constitution and read it out loud. I can't believe it's come to this. We're reading the Constitution at dinner. And it was fascinating. It's not that easy.
It's not.
And the circumstances, the groundwork that would have to be laid, the circumstances that would have to happen for the House to be able to take over this election are extraordinary. And I don't see that happening.
I agree with you 150%.
Thank you. I'm glad.
However,
we have...
There are so many other things that I've heard, that can never happen, that have happened. Mm-hmm. So I understand the wariness that people have.
Yeah.
Except that since 2020, right, yes, since the 2020 election, there has been so much work done at boards of elections statewide and locally to ensure the integrity of these of the ballots and the elections. I mean, when
both,
I listen
both
to...
Both good and bad.
Yeah. When I listen to... Well, sort of. But when I listen to Roethlisberger, I think is his name is
Brad
the guy.
Roethlisberger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's a Republican talking about...
Roethlisberger. Go ahead.
It might also be the...
Not the football player.
Not the football player, right. But talking about how much work they've done to guarantee the integrity of this election... And that no one's going to be able to do what Trump tried to do. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like he's voting for Harris. But B, that, when these people who are boards of elections commissioners and are responsible for these elections, by and large, want the elections to be held fairly and without bias. You have now some of the deniers. Now part of some of these boards of elections, but those are in massively red states anyway, and it's not going to change the outcome of the vote there.
Brad Raffensperger, yeah. For the record. Okay. Let's go to this letter from Gene. I do not have the luxury of voting for the economy or immigration when my health care is on the ballot. Cheap gas is not going to console my family when a young mother dies from pregnancy complications. That from Gene. We go to Crystal. Regarding the election, I keep hearing that it will come down to the women, or it will come down to other minority groups to swing the vote away from Trump. I have to say I understand the spirit of that remark, but I'm also tired of it needing to come down to the women. What about it comes down to the men and others who love women in their lives? Where are the white, cis, hetero men that it comes down to? I know this program gives these men a platform, but broadly, come on, men. Writes Crystal.
I think what we're talking about is not what we feel it should come down to, but what it looks like it will come down to, or that it would likely come down to. And she's absolutely right. It would be great if, you know, it was plenty of white cis men who said, wow, this is crazy.
The polls they do of, what do they call the after polls or something like that? Exit polls, exactly. Escape my mind. The exit polls will reveal some amazing things, I'm sure, after this election, and maybe it'll help us understand all of this a whole lot better.
Let's go on to some other things. One that has, I think, for many of us has found to be interesting is the talk, and of course we won't know what this means until tonight or tomorrow or in the days to come, but there is that poll in Iowa, and Libby mentioned it yesterday, and we're talking about it again today. Over the weekend, people who pay close attention to political polls received a November surprise. A well-respected poll showing Vice President Kamala Harris leading in Iowa by 3 percentage points. Iowa has not been considered a swing state in the presidential race. Former President Donald Trump won the state by 8 points in 2020, and every other poll there this year has shown him with a lead of at least 4 points. The Cook Political Report rates Iowa as solid Republican. The new poll was startling and actually caused some jostling in online prediction markets, in part because of the source, the revered independent pollster J. Ann Selzer, who is one of the most highly rated practitioners in the country and has a track record of exemplary work. But polls are best understood in aggregate, and any single poll by itself is prone to a certain amount of error. Overall, Mr. Trump still has a 3-point advantage in the New York Times polling average of Iowa, even with the new Selzer poll included in it. So why the uproar over this single poll, and what should voters make of it as we head into Election Day? The poll has caused so many pundits and politicos to sit up because Ms. Selzer has been here before. In the final week before the 2020 election, Ms. Selzer released a poll of Iowa conducted by the Des Moines Register that showed Trump leading by 7 points in the state. It was an outlier. Other polls showed a much tighter race, with an average showing Mr. Trump ahead by just over 1 point. Ms. Seltzer's own poll from September of that year had shown Mr. Trump in a tie with Joe Biden. But Mr. Trump won Iowa that year by 53-45%, an 8-point margin of victory. I've been the outlier queen so many times, Ms. Seltzer said in a phone interview on Monday. I'm not jumpy. So, which... you don't want your pollster to be jumpy. But it is an interesting poll, and especially of what it means for some of the surrounding states of who also have very similar demographics.
Yeah, it's one poll. And she, J. Ann Selzer, has done a lot of interviews over the weekend after this poll came out, and she's the first one to say, hey, I could be wrong. You know, polls are, there's all kinds of things that can happen when you take a poll. That's why the aggregate of several polls tends to be a little more accurate. But she's good at what she does, and it could mean that people in the Midwest and neighboring states are tired of Donald Trump and see this as an opportunity to move on. And that is the theme of the Harris campaign. So they may be either enthusiastically or reluctantly, but ready to say no to Trump.
It could also be, I think there was a pretty draconian abortion law in Iowa that was motivating people, and that could have a big effect on women in particular,
and
those white cis men who care about women. I wouldn't be surprised if that had something to do with it, but I think the other thing that's interesting that's said in the story is, you know, it's as if people were kind of undecided before, and a lot of people have just woken up and said, yeah, I'm going to vote, and this is who I'm going to vote for. And wow. I tend to think that a combination of those things, and particularly women, are driving that quote-unquote anomaly. And it would be nice to see in the in the neighboring states. We'll see.
Well, you know, I know Ohio is another one. I mean, and they passed the constitutional amendment protecting choice. Yeah. Iowa did not. They've got a 6-week ban. But who knows what could happen? I mean, this is the thing. People don't just underestimate women, period. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, Kamala, what do I really know about her? Right. You know, she's I like Darth Vader, you know, that whole thing. But and then, you know, our votes. The overwhelming majority of women in this country are pro-choice. And we had this right for 50 years and it was taken away on a whim. And now women are dying and they don't care. That's the other part of this, is that these folks who put in this abortion ban do not care about the fact these women are dying. And that is so anti-life, I can't even begin to explain it.
No, the attitude is we're perfectly okay because now the states are deciding, which in some universe, that's the way it ought to be. And so, you know, and then what I think people are starting to become aware of is this is not the end game of that movement. The end game of the movement is a national ban that cancels out, even if Prop 1 passes.
Right.
The end game of that movement is to cancel out state protections and make it a national 6-week ban, 15-week ban. I think it's going to start with an effort toward a 15-week ban.
So this is what made up my day yesterday, and it's about a poll, and I saw it and I thought, huh, and then everything went downhill from there. So PBS, NPR, and Marist put out a poll, the final poll. Two things about this poll. One, that it was the last poll before the election probably will be taken. While there will be other smaller polls that may come out sometime today, for the most part, this is the last major poll.
And it's a quality poll.
Is being released. It is a quality poll.
Ordinarily, a Marist poll is a highly regarded poll. Mm-hmm.
What is also incredibly interesting about this poll is that it is one of the very few polls that is outside the margin of error. It is a poll that, now I will emphasize, slightly outside the margin of error, but it is outside the margin of error. I read to you from the press release. On the eve of the 2024 presidential election, Vice President Kamala Harris holds a 4-point lead over former President Donald Trump among likely voters nationally, according to the latest PBS, NPR, Marist poll. Harris has the support of 51% of likely voters to Trump's 47%, a lead just outside the poll's margin of error. A little more than half of the independents support the Republican nominee, a 5-point lead over Harris. It has been and remains a close election, said our friend Lee Miringoff, director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion. As far as the popular vote is concerned, it's hers to lose. Okay.
I would just add to that, Zogby put out a poll yesterday and essentially had the same, I think in the same ballpark, it was 4 points, I believe, nationally.
Now, meanwhile, my friends at NPR, you know, we are an NPR affiliate, don't you know? they put out a NPR breaking news, okay? NPR breaking news. For their own poll, for their own poll. NPR poll. In a tight race, voters are split on whether Harris intends to carry out her promises.
And that was on the same poll that you were just talking about.
Well, there's
about.
The headline.
Right. Respondents in a new NPR PBS Marist poll aren't convinced Vice President Harris, as president, would carry out the proposal she's put forward during the campaign, and a sign of what may be preventing her from closing the deal with voters.
Well, that's been a Trump, you know.
I was going to say that's a
Trump's
Fox
campaign.
What the ever loving hell is that, though?
Well, is it a survey where people were asked? You know, in some neutral way, do you have faith that Kamala Harris's promises during the campaign are what she will follow through with? And if they have doubts about that, because Trump has tried to portray her as kind of not being specific, and actually she's a secret radical liberal who's going to let schools send kids for transgender reassignment or something. You know, I mean, you know, they're painting her to be radical, and that has scared people. I mean, it may be a reflection of that. And you know, it's a trope that Harris isn't telling you what she really wants to do. She says one thing, but she means something.
But how does that become the headline?
Right.
How do when if
well,
you are?
I'll defend the headline a little bit. If the survey showed that they. A survey shows that people are unsure of whether Harris will follow through. That's a fact.
Yeah, but isn't that the survey that you just talked about?
Yes.
The NPR,
the
PBS?
NPR, the,
okay, so they dug into the tabs and pulled that out and made that the headline.
Yeah, so why?
Well, because headline writers like to get you
into
a story.
No, I'll tell you why. They're hedging their bets. They know Harris won't pull funding from NPR. They know she won't.
I don't know if it's that transactional.
and they're trying to curry a little favor with Trump so that he doesn't pull their funding.
Yeah,
because
I mean, that's the accusation on Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post and a lot of other billionaires who, you know,
It's also possible that you're looking at one headline of many. On the
press
release.
This is what we got released from NPR breaking news, NPR.org. This came out about, it usually takes NPR about 20 or 30 minutes to cover breaking story after everybody else. But, and that was the case here. But, so when the PBS poll came out, the press release from Marist, and PBS, that comes out, and then NPR then puts that out.
What an odd thing. The PBS headline on PBS.org is...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, you know, Harris has 4-point lead.
That's right.
Right, and so the NPR.
Which seems to me to be the headline there, but I found it to be fascinating.
It's the way that Fox would search through a story for one fact that it could put in the headline that's pejorative as opposed to a very positive otherwise story on the Harris campaign.
Just keep that in the back of your brain.
So now are we all going to get in trouble?
Find out when I leave the room.
Okay.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have more on this election. We'll have another half hour with our wonderful panel, and we welcome letters from you. Panel at WAMC.org will continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to I think we all got it out of our system. That's good. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Election Day 2024. Mike Spain is here, Jay Jochnowitz, and Libby Post. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. And we have quite a few letters. We'll get to more of those in just a few minutes. Again, I just want to remind you that we're going to be doing a three-hour live program, a postmortem of the election, looking at what happened today, and we'll do that tomorrow. And which is better, and wouldn't be as effective today. And we're going to do that tomorrow and look through and see where we are and what has happened and what we know and what we don't know. And we are going to have just an array of panelists joining us. We're going to be over at the Linda. Breakfast will be served. Doors open at 8:30, and the panel will be there. We would love to have you be a part of this very special broadcast. And no matter what happens over the next 24 hours, we would love for you to be with us. All you have to do is go to our website, WAMC.org. You'll see where you can click on the link to bring you to the point where you can donate and get a seat and secure a seat for that event taking place tomorrow at the Linda on Central Avenue in Albany. All right. Let us go to a couple of letters. Giving Roe v. Wade back to the states means taking a right, in this case, a right granted by a kind of benevolent court 50 years ago, and putting this right on the ballot. That's not now. That's not how rights work. How long before same-sex marriage, interracial marriage, birth control, and even slavery are sent back to the states? That from Joseph.
That's a really good point.
Then we go to this letter from Eric. What would need to happen for the Supreme Court to get to elect Trump? Well, that gets into the what we were talking about.
The 5-4 decision back in the year 2000 that put George W. Bush into office.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, if there was a contested outcome somewhere that would result in it going one way or the other, and it got all the way up to the Supreme Court, that would put them in a position of deciding allegedly on the merits of whether those 1,000 votes or those 500 votes should be counted or shouldn't be counted based on law.
Or how they're counted or
anything
like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to Christine. Have you discussed Harris's support for Israel? Isn't that what's making the choice today impossible?
Harris has been very clear in her support for Israel and Israel's right to exist and for the hostages to come home. But also, she, as many of us have voiced, are concerned with the plight of the Palestinians, their need for self-determination. But is not under any kind of Pollyanna-ish perspective that Hamas is really the rightful representative of these people. Let's not forget, Hamas and Hezbollah routinely use civilians as human shields. That's why so many people have been killed. If Hezbollah and Hamas fought conventionally, you know, out in the field with, here's our folks, here's your folks. Like, you know, even in Vietnam, go into the jungles, I mean, or the desert, as it were. But that's right. But that's not what's going on here. And so, you know, people need to understand that this is not a binary situation. It's not good or evil. There's a lot going on. And I will say, as I have always said, Israel has a right to exist. Israel has a right to defend itself. Where are the hostages? Why isn't there still outrage about that? Why isn't there outrage about using rape as a weapon of war? And Harris understands these issues. And Trump is just going to be a knee-jerk reaction. Whatever Netanyahu wants, he'll get from the United States. And that's not a good situation either, because I don't support his
Netanyahu.
I don't support his policies at all.
Yeah, it really is the difference between someone who understands nuance and someone who just, the world is black and white, and there's a lot of people who like the world black and white, what we're dealing with on a whole bunch of levels here.
I think you just summed it up, though, Jay. This whole election is about someone who looks at it black and white.
That's for
sure. Or, binary, and some people who understand nuance. And unfortunately, nuance doesn't translate easily into three-word chants.
No, it doesn't.
Right.
And it doesn't.
Lock her up.
You know, you can't put it on a little sign and wave it at a rally. And that's the trouble here.
You know, I mean, she understands foreign policy, that this is
You know, I was reading the other day, apropos of foreign policy, that Eisenhower, you know, the American hero who saved, you know, World War II and won victory in World War II and everything, was not going to get into politics.
Right.
Except Senator Taft from Ohio, the son of President Taft, was leading the Republican primary system and was going to be the candidate, and he wanted the U.S. to abandon NATO and stay out of world affairs and basically become an isolationist. Worked really well after World War One,
didn't it, though?
Yeah. And so Eisenhower said he had no choice. We need to engage the rest of the world. And he got in the race to easily get the nomination and easily get elected. He could have been elected as a Democrat. He could have been elected as an independent. But he chose to come in and rescue the Republican Party and understand that we need to be engaged in the rest of the world. And I'm not sure Trump understands that at all. It's just a transactional thing. What can you do for me and what can I do for you?
Marcus writes, all I'm hearing is how close the polls are. But what I'm also hearing is that the results perhaps may not be as close. What gives? So this is something we were talking about earlier. There's actually an article about this in the New York Times. These two things are true about the presidential race. The polls currently show Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump effectively tied, and close polls do not necessarily mean there will be a close result. This may feel counterintuitive, but the fact is that we are just a very normal polling error away from either candidate landing a decisive victory, especially in the Electoral College. This is a point that Nate Cohn of the New York Times has made regularly in his election race updates over the last few weeks, but it bears repeating because a lopsided result when there is an expectation of only razor-thin margins could further fan distrust in the polls and in the election process itself.
Yeah, really just a question of the Electoral College versus the popular vote. So you win narrowly enough states and you can run away with the election.
Right.
Well, that's what happened in 2016. Hillary Clinton had a plurality nationally, but she lost because of the way it all shook down in the Electoral College.
Which is why we need to get rid of the Electoral College.
Well, yeah.
Would we say that if the dynamics of the Electoral College were different, though?
Yeah, but the thing is that I think—
Change the Electoral College.
Gore won the popular vote, right, in 2000. I mean— Yeah, I think it's time. I mean, it was a safeguard by the founding fathers back in the day.
Well, it was a big compromise.
Yeah, right.
I mean, just, you know, that the whole Constitution ended up being a compromise.
Yeah, and so, you know,
it backfired.
So, yeah, it's. I think we would be saying this. It's time for some change.
Whether
it's going to happen or not is a different story.
It would certainly make candidates work harder on a message that appealed to the whole—
That's right.
The majority of the country. And that is, the Electoral College does not encourage that.
No.
Not with the way the states are configured now.
I'd like to see it like Maine and Nebraska. Maine and Nebraska will award their electoral votes by congressional district. And percentage-wise, people will get what the people of that state wanted. Right now, it makes no sense for any candidate to come to New York except to get some money, you know, to raise money, because New York is solidly blue for presidential races, and we don't get to participate in the election. It's like it doesn't matter.
Could have a rally at Madison Square
Garden. I was going to say, that was supposed to accomplish.
Well, that was to raise money, and because New York City is the center of the universe, you know, you can go there and do that. But
For Trump, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. This paragraph I thought was interesting in this article in the New York Times. Since 1998, election polls in presidential, House, Senate, and governor's races have diverged from the final vote tally by an average of 6 percentage points. That, according to an analysis from 538. But in the 2022 midterm elections, that average was 4.8%, making it the most accurate polling cycle in the last quarter of a century. If polls were off this year in either direction by the same margin, the winning candidate would score a decisive victory.
Yeah, so we may know by this time tomorrow. There may even be, we will know. Perhaps. And we might not know for 5 days. We didn't find out till Saturday, as we talked about earlier today. And it could take even longer for it to all shake out. And who's going to control the House and the Senate? That may be taking longer because of recounts and absentee ballots being voted for, you know, being counted properly,
right,
and opened and
verified. How tight the races are.
Yeah. But the one thing, the pollsters were wrong In 2016, as we know, and they were wrong in 2020. And they were getting more accurate by 2022. They think, and it's only they think, that they have corrected some of the errors that they had in their earlier projections. They have changed their methodology. They're compensating for the reality. You can't call someone up and get a hold of them on the phone. They have different methods to measure. And we still don't know.
We'll see.
Meanwhile, we watch Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia, and North Carolina very closely. We'll take a break. We'll wrap up on the other side of this break as we continue to take a look at Election Day 2024, and we'll have our closing thoughts after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Carrie writes to us and says the obsession with polls is one symptom of the failure of the media. You all on the panel may not be as obsessed with them as the major outlets are, but it's still something that must be addressed or we will continue on this slide in respect for the media. The media covers politics and campaigns much more than it covers candidates and policies. Don't tell me the public isn't interested in the latter. That's not what the media's job is.
Well, in fairness, at the local level, at the local level and the state level, we really don't obsess about this because there isn't that much to obsess about.
Right.
You know, we do look at the issues and the candidates and so forth. It is, unfortunately, the horse race nationally is. They're right, and yet it's a reality of life. We all want to know who is likely to win this race.
But I still say you can get the other part too. It's there also. It's right out there. I have read so many stories on what a Trump presidency would be like, what a Harris presidency would be like, what their position on this, where they agree, where they disagree, where they're murky. I've read tons of it. It's there. You're also covering the horse race, just for the reasons Jay said.
Yeah, when I went to write the some people know anyway. We did two editorials. We did one on a traditional endorsement editorial on the two Fridays ago, and we did the following Sunday we did a piece on Trump himself and all the
reasons not to vote for him.
All the reasons not to vote for him, which just drove some people nuts. But when I went to research the traditional editorial, there's such an abundance of information on both these candidates out there. It is not hard to tell you what would he do with Social Security? What would she do with Social Security? What would they do with the federal workforce? With the war in Ukraine? It's all out there. There is no mystery about these people and the nonsense when we've talked about this. That, you know, I don't know where she stands on. Yes. You do if you would do the thing you keep saying you're doing, which
it's
is
a lot
your own
easier
research.
Now. A lot easier.
Yeah, you just go online. It's easy.
Now I've harshed my own mellow.
No, but I mean, the thing about the horse race. I mean, I hesitate a little bit to say this, but I mean, the other thing too is we have a candidate. One of the major party candidates, is also obsessed with the polls, and I think that plays into this a lot too. Mm-hmm. We also, I mean, we're looking at a system where it's an inexact science at times.
Polling.
Occasionally. Yeah. Polling. Yeah. And yet we will look at it and say, okay, third-party candidate or okay, candidate X, Y, or Z, you weren't going to be on the debate stage because you don't have the polling that would indicate you have enough votes to be on. So... You know, you can't have it both ways. You have to look at it and say, all right, we're going to believe in this or we're not. And I think it's sort of the only measure that you can go on. I don't know what else you do.
I mean, I think a lot of people don't pay that much attention till they see who's leading in the polls, and then
That's
they
right.
start to focus on them, and they sort of forget about the people that haven't been able to get to the table.
And there are people. As one of you said, or I think your friend said, that aren't paying attention and
exactly.
don't pay attention because they don't really think it impacts their lives. Which there was one year in my life where I took a break. It was like the year after my mom died, and I really did take a break. And I was like, wow, this is easy not to get engaged, not to, get riled up, not to feel, get any kind of emotional whatever, and just say, well, this doesn't impact me. I'm going to be doing something else. And it's, you know, I don't know how people can live like that now, but, you know, people, there are many, many people who don't think that politics, government, any of it really impacts their lives at all. And so they say, I don't care. And it's
weird. They feel powerless, too. Yeah. I mean, I think
there's a lot
of people who shrug their shoulders and feel powerless and just try to find gratification in relationships and other things, hobbies, sports.
That could be, but I also think that there are people who just don't care.
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So here's I said this yesterday on the show. Libby was here. I've done my best over the last how long did we say we were covering this election for? Four years?
Forever.
That we wouldn't get so much into a prognostication, but we have 5 minutes, and I have the three of you, and I'm curious as to if you had to bet on it, what do you think?
I think that the latest indicators suggest that it is going to be an election that this time tomorrow we know the results of, and I'll predict that. And I'm still not sure what those results will be, but I think the momentum is with Harris. So I'll say that'll be my bet, and tomorrow we'll sit here looking at 6 months of legal stuff going on or whatever.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. That I think the momentum is with her. I don't think that sometimes they say if she only had 3 more days, 2 more weeks, or something like that. I don't think we're going to feel that way tomorrow.
I think we've had as much
time as everybody needs to figure out who they're for, and I think we're going to be pleasantly relieved. Maybe not surprised. In the end, we will be pleasantly relieved. I'd like to think that. So I don't know how much of that is delusion. I will not be surprised if he takes it.
Well, that's it. I mean, I think that's it's always hard when you are asked questions like that of, you know, what you want and what you think is going to happen. But also, I mean, it after 2016, nothing will surprise me.
Yeah. No.
I remember that feeling.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's nothing will surprise me. Libby.
Harris Walz will win.
All right.
Okay. I mean, I think the wind is at her back. The momentum is building. You peak. You want to peak. Now you have to peak with early voting and Election Day, but you want to build up to win on Election Day and peak on Election Day. There were folks who thought they peaked too early, but I think that they have recaptured that momentum. And I think that Trump tries to peak every single day, which is part of the problem.
Is that joke somewhere?
Yeah, I know.
No, the decision to let Trump be Trump, which has sort of guided the campaign since September, you know, just let him go out there. He revs up the crowds and all that. I think it may have backfired.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Well, in fairness, I don't think that was his campaign's plan. I think that was
plan. Well, there's been a lot written about his campaign being very frustrated with him.
Yes.
He even references it. He says, "They say to me, sir, don't say those words, sir."
Right.
And I say, "Why not?"
Sir.
You know?
Sir.
So there is a tension between him and his handlers, and the decision was that he's Trump and he's going to do it.
All right. All three of you handled that very well. So now we enter the bonus round, House and Senate.
Ding, 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 ding. We'll take the House. I don't know about the Senate.
Okay.
I think that's right. I think New York in particular is going to make that decision for America.
Right.
Yeah, I think Hakeem Jeffries will be the Speaker of the House of Representatives. And I will be surprised if the Democrats hold on to the Senate.
I have to say that I have a former student who's working for John Tester, and I texted him yesterday, said good luck, and he said, when I talked to him the last time, he didn't think they were going to win. He says the wind is at their backs now, so you never know.
It's very windy out there.
Yeah, well, it is Montana. It's all flat, but you never know. I mean, if Tester can pull it off, if Colin Allred can pull it off, which is possible because people really don't like Ted Cruz, You know, I think Tammy Baldwin will be fine out in Wisconsin. And Alyssa Slotkin in Michigan. Ohio, I think Sherrod Brown's going to win. So we'll see what happens.
Regardless of who ends up winning control, if Texas is a flip, that would just be priceless.
Yeah, that it would really be amazing. Would.
Yeah.
That would lead our discussion. Well, yeah. We'll be back in, 21 hours from now? And our 22 hours from now, and we'll be gathered at the Linda to go through what happened and how the count has gone. We do hope that you can join us. We'd love for you to. Just go to WAMC.org and check out how you can put in a donation for a seat at the round table. We would love to have you there. To all of you, thank you very much for being with us and for sharing your expertise. And
go home and get some rest, Joe.
Yeah, don't go stay up too late now, folks. We got a show to do tomorrow. We'll be back right after this.